All right, welcome in. This is episode 20 of the Individual Skills Hockey Podcast. I'm Miles Deeth. Thank you for tuning in again. We have an unbelievable episode planned out for you. We have three head high school coaches here at the Plymouth Ice Center. You've already heard from Dave Brown and Pat O'Leary on previous episodes, but we're excited to welcome in Sean Bloomfield from Chanhassen. Sean, how's it going?
It's good. Quite the drive today. Going through a little snowstorm here that we didn't really have much of all winter, but thanks for having me. Excited.
Pat, Dave, how are you guys doing?
I'm going to Mexico tomorrow. I'm doing really good.
I do not have a trip planned, but need one.
Yeah. So again, thank you for coming today. I know it's bad weather, but our topic for today, actually, before we do that, I want to do a little intro with Sean because the listeners might not know what you're all about and your background and how you got into coaching.
Sure. Yeah. So I coaching at Chanhassen now. Right out of college, when I was student teaching at Bloomington Jefferson my last year of college, I had Tom Satterdahl on as my mentor and really wanted to get back connected with the game. Grew up playing, and he kind of got me in as a Bantam coach in Jefferson. And then right after that, my old coach when I was at Chaska growing up, Dave Snuggerud, he got the head job back again at Chaska. So I reached out to him, and he let me join the staff, was with him for about 9 years. And then after he stepped down, I applied for the Chaska job, did not get it. And about 2 weeks later, the Chan job opened up and got that. So been at Chanhassen for 3 years now.
And so how many coaches has Chan had? Because they weren't in high school until what year?
Yeah, so the high school was built, I want to say, in 2010. Okay. First graduating class would have been 2011. They didn't have seniors that first year. So I know that first year the program stayed combined, Chaska Chan. And then so that, yeah, the first graduating group would have been the 2011 crew. Chris Wilson was their head coach. He's now, I know he had some background in Minnetonka as well. He was their head coach until I want to say about 2016, 2017. And then Jesse Willis was their head coach for about 5 years. And then myself. So I'm the third coach.
Okay, awesome. One quick question on that, because I think it's interesting. So you've kind of seen, obviously you've had a lot of success the last couple of years. You've seen a program come into fruition, let's say. How has that experience been of building it up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of twice that I've had the experience of doing that. When I started at Chaska, you know, we had 25 kids in the program. We were going up and playing some small single A schools like Moose Lake and Ely a couple times a year, just to, because they were similar competitively sized programs. And then we had a good crew come through and about starting in about 2015, and it was fun building that group up. You know, obviously to have a good program, you got to have good players. And so that was number one, and creating a culture where players wanted to play there and train and get better. And then switching over to Chanhassen, there was already a good group of players that had decided to go there as ninth graders. Not all of them played high school as ninth graders. Some of them played Bantam still. And so when they all became sophomores, that was my first year there. So the groundwork was already kind of building. And then it was a matter of using my experiences at Chaska and then building a staff around it that would hopefully take it to the next step.
Awesome. All right. So like I mentioned, we're going to have a topic here today with these three head high school coaches of different changes that we might like to see in high school hockey in Minnesota. I think all of us are fans of Minnesota high school hockey and understand its importance and efficiency at developing players moving on to the next level. But there's always changes that can be made. And so what I'm going to do is just throw out topics, and I'm going to have you guys just chime in whenever you want on different things. So the first thing I have on my list here is game amount. Obviously, we play 25 regular season games. Obviously, everyone, I think, wants to see that increased. But how do you think that could be accomplished in the future?
Well, I want to start out by saying that I think, you know, I'm on the board with the Minnesota State High School League, and one thing that we kind of wanted to touch base on this year was we know there's a lot of things that are going to be changing before we touch on the subject and, you know, things to try to make the game better. But I think the first thing we need to make sure we all agree on here is that the high school hockey in Minnesota right now is, I don't know, the best it's ever been.
Agreed.
Which is a good thing. Thinking about just specifically this year, how many kids came back to play their senior year or junior year for that matter. And the product on the ice is, and this will be my 14th year coming up, is, I mean, I can't remember it being as deep and how many good coaches there are that are retaining their positions, which is a big issue, and just continue to develop good players and putting kids in the NDTP program and USHL, North American League, BC League, all of it, and then as you keep walking, going all the way up to, you know, NCAA and so on and so forth. So I think that's a big thing that we need to make sure that everyone knows when we're starting this day off, that the product on the ice right now is ridiculous.
Yeah, kids that like were on first power play units in the USHL coming back to play their senior years is when I grew up in the late 2010s, that didn't happen for sure. So, but yeah, let's go to game count. I'm assuming everyone wants it more games.
Yeah, I think it would probably have to be. I know that the struggle with a lot of these rules that we look at is that the State High School League does not just serve hockey, right? They have a lot of different sports, and they promote multi-sport athletes, which I think is a great thing to promote for these guys. You know, you have a lot of guys that are dedicated to hockey only by the time they're juniors, seniors, and going to USHL and juniors. But we have a lot of great athletes that play multiple sports. Like this year we had one of our top forwards was playing football, and he missed the first two games because football season was still going. So I don't think that you're going to extend the season into the fall at all. But it does seem like there's a couple of weeks of at least time to add it on the back end between the state tournament and spring breaks and things like that.
Yeah, that was kind of my main question, like extending it like actual weeks or just playing more often with the time that we have. I mean we had a couple weeks this year where we had either one game or even zero games or Saturdays off. And
the one thing that I would like to see is, you know, I know it's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday is the norm, or a Thursday or Saturday. I think if you go to a Friday, Saturday slate, like every week, you're going to allow yourself to have good practices on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, as opposed to being like, man, we got a game Thursday, so what do you do with that Wednesday practice? And then, I don't know how you guys feel, but they never want to practice on Friday in between the games. And so when you're factoring in those two training days, and I just look at like college teams and junior teams, and it's Friday, Saturday slates, I feel like that would enable us to train them harder and better in the early part of the weeks, and then also get like a scheduling thing to where, you know, college teams can get 35 games in, and their schedule, their calendar's not that far off from ours. And I just think if you look at Friday, Saturday options, you could find a way to get 35 games in. And that doesn't even count the fact that we are willing to play three-game slates in tournaments around the holidays and those types of things.
Well, I think that I've spoke to specifically the late conference coaches about doing like Friday, Saturday home and homes with that and stuff like that would be really cool. But everything comes down to coaching, from scheduling, right? And so like the other thing that comes into play is, and I 100% agree on the Friday, Saturday, because if we're going to continue to develop these players, you know, day before games practices aren't always the best. I mean, we know the ones between games are not good. You're losing, you know, 2.5 hours a week of training time. The devil's advocate, I think, in my opinion, is like things that you get that why it's a hard steadfast right now, why it's not happening, is there's two reasons. One, small communities. But the problem with it, and I see it, and I was actually talking to a couple up north coaches, is that would they rather travel on a Friday or Saturday from Bemidji to Moorhead, or would you rather do it on a Tuesday night? Because that's what they're doing, which is, we're blessed with being able to drive 15 minutes to play. So that's number one. Number two is, I think, I actually talked to our girls coaches, the girls situation comes into play a lot, right? Like how many girls programs actually want to add more games to it? Now, whether that makes, do we have to keep it equal? I think there sounds like you're going to have to.
Yeah.
That's the second part that's a really good point. You know, the girls programs might not want to play 35 games. So, not all of them, not some of them, like all of them were. So those are the two things, you know, that come to mind when I think about it. And I don't know what the answer to those two questions are really.
Yeah. I think from a scheduling standpoint of like rink availability, mm-hmm. when you factor in that boys teams and girls teams playing all on Friday, Saturday night, that's a lot of rinks being used, right? I know you could stagger, you could have 5 o'clock games. I don't know if you guys have ever done like an earlier game on a school day. It's actually great. Kids go right to the rink. They're ready to go. Obviously, you have to miss some school if you're the away team and it's a longer drive. But
which they are anyway sometimes.
Yeah, they're doing, and heck, like golf season.
Would you rather leave school early, or would you rather get home at 2 a.m. the next day from Bemidji?
100%.
Yeah, you'd rather leave school early. And I'd never thought of the training piece of it. If you have a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday week, I mean, you're Monday, Wednesday, Friday, your three practices that week, or you can get some stuff done. It's a lot, but it's more so just kind of honing things in, not necessarily, you know, building on anything.
Yeah.
So having 4 days in a row of practice where one day, and think about it during section playoffs, you kind of get that time. If you make it far enough, you get a few days in advance to, one, work on what you struggled at last game, two, build on things you want to build on, and then three, once you get closer to the game, actually game plan for that opponent. Mm-hmm. So if it was a Friday, Saturday, you could, you know, conference games, like you said, you could play the same team two games back to back. That would be fun.
Yeah,
I think there's one thing I want to underline here. These coaches are talking about how you kind of have a wasted practice in between a Thursday and a Saturday game, and I think a lot of people don't really understand that might be listening. Let's say Chan Heston's going to play Minnetonka on the road, and they go to overtime on Thursday night, and then you turn around and play Eden Prairie on Saturday. The kids, what we're talking about is they're mentally wiped on that Friday after such an emotional, intense game on Thursday night.
And
so,
school all day.
Yeah, and school all day. Right. So I just for people out there listening, what do you mean you wasted practice? It's like that's what goes on in high school. So.
It's just not as productive.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, you know, we want kids to prepare all 25 games. And, you know, you look at the leagues that they're deciding to play between, if they're going to leave early or not, and, like, that is their job. Right, they get to the rink at 9 and they go home at 5. So allowing them mentally to be able to handle the athlete student perspective, with the way the coaches have leveled up and the game is at the best it's ever been, I think mentally speaking, you know, the schedule needs to adjust to the way the boys are being pushed, in my opinion, just because it is, you know, junior hockey caliber. And that is something that should be protected, and we want those kids to play. But having a schedule that facilitates them mentally and physically, I think, is incredibly important.
All right, good stuff. I think there is an opportunity at the end, like you said, to add maybe a week or two, too.
So, yeah, so you get an extra four games.
Is spring
just
break
there.
The reason? Or, like, I know basketball tournament.
No, the reason that they talked about at the Coach Association is youth hockey stuff. Like, that all the district – ice time, right?
Which is ironic that they start in September and they go longer than us. So, like, if
wouldn't you think the state championship of boys high school hockey would be the last thing of the year, not the Bantam
be a good culmination? yeah. Well, and right now they're doing districts.
Yeah.
So, like, we had a lot of my own son had to decide between going to his District 6 squirt game or coming to the state championship game. You know?
Agreed.
That's that. And you're going to get that, but if the state tournament is the last thing, maybe you don't.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. There's one quick one here related to scheduling, I guess. Game length. I know on our podcast, Dave, you were talking about moving to 20-minute periods. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, my main point for that is I think all three of us have talented teams. I mean, I'm guessing you wanted to play your third line more than you did, but
yeah,
when you have the horses that you do on the front, like, those guys need to play 22 minutes a night. And so when you break down the time on ice, you either play your first line 20 to 22 minutes and your third line 7 to 8 minutes, or you play your third line 11 to 13 minutes and your first line 15 to 17 minutes. And it's a lose-lose. Not just trying to win the game, but deciding between which grouping is going to get that elite development. I think from a 20-minute period standpoint, and again, you know, a back-to-back would really help teams not just play three kids the whole game. I think, you know, you're trying to play a certain way. That's the right way for development and speed purposes. But then if you're playing a Thursday game and they don't play Friday or Saturday, they're going to play their top kids. I mean, if you look at some teams, they're playing their top kids 30 to 35 minutes. And then I think that skews statistics and individual awards that some kids get overlooked, and I think some kids get underlooked just from the landscape of the way our game's played on a 51-minute slate and not a 60-minute slate.
I mean, I think also, too, the thing that in this conversations came up with other people, too, is at some point, and I don't know if it'll ever happen, but, you know, as you continue to have coaches from all different levels of play, meaning small schools, big schools, private schools, whatever the case may be. Like, the communication piece needs to be better, I think. And the first layer of the onion that you can, I think, is a very simple fix is, why can't you just pick it game to game, right? So, like, if we're playing Chan, like, if we have the ice at pick, why can't we play 20-minute periods? Who really cares about the stats? You know what I mean? Like, it's about the development. And the teams that actually, if you go through the, not to say be Captain Obvious here, but if you go through a list of teams that have played in the state championship or won the state championship in the last 15 years, it's teams, obviously, that are talented. We all know that. But that have a deep roster that play. You can shorten your bench all you want when you get to the state championship, but getting there and playing, especially in a three-game back-to-back-to-back, like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, the teams that show up at the end of the year that go to or in the state championship, win it, lose it, whatever the case may be, are ones that are pretty deep and have, you know, talented kids. So a game-to-game thing might work, or, you know, the thing, the problem is that if you start going conference to conference, it's like conferences are so different now, and the ability level in each conference is changing so much, and what teams you play on a consistent basis is not matter of fact, and it's, you know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah, you got conferences that top to bottom are totally different. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's games in the lake. Games in the lake that were 18-0, and games that were 2-1 in overtime. So, like, I think
maybe a double A, single A. But I mean, double A plays 20 minutes, single A plays 17.
That was the first thing I thought of, but yeah, I don't know if I almost like the, you just let them decide when they.
Well, that's what our JV can decide.
Yeah, between 15 and 17.
JV teams do that, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just
So here's a question for you. Why do they do that? And the very simple answer is, coming from other coaches and speaking for myself, is it's a developmental piece for your JV kids. Because in a big program, if you know, specifically a big program, like, we have a ton of Bantam AA kids that played JV hockey that we're trying to develop and enjoy the process,
right,
and get ready for varsity, you hope, at some point. But if not, like, we don't want them to pick junior gold over JV, because it's like the junior, you know, the JV team is – should be better development and better consistency in games over the full year, and that's why they're allowed to do that. And it's like, okay, well, then now we're not letting the varsity teams do that either,
right? Yeah, if the goal is development, mm-hmm, you want to do what makes and the most sense for your program,
right? They always say about the experience.
Yeah.
Well, I think also, if you do play 20-minute periods of specific games that you'd want to, like, let's say against us versus Edina, like, then we'd play four lines in 60, and you'd really get developed, and those kids would get better development as well, and evaluation process too.
Yeah, I think that'd be a tough sell.
Oh yeah,
but based on what, you know, it should be, I think that's accurate. And then you'd have to make a uniform decision for sections and state, and in that sense, you probably would do something closer to 17 or. Mm-hmm.
I do think a lot of these are tough sells, unless, I mean, I'm sure you're going to get to the class system.
Yeah,
and I know how he feels on that.
Well, any change is going to.
It's hard.
Be like red tape and grinding gears. But
well, I think what the biggest message you have in speaking with other, not just this podcast, but speaking with other coaches around and people that are, you know, important in the decision making, is like, to get the message off of why we're trying to do this.
Yep.
It's not a selfish thing. It's for the kids. It's trying to, for a development model, and we're trying to continue to build the process and the product that's put on the ice that we just talked about at the beginning of this podcast, is how good it is. We got to continue to evolve and what makes it better as we keep changing over time.
Yep. All right, a couple more kind of related to scheduling. I wanted to talk about, or ask you guys about, kind of like some flexibility increases in conference play. I know some conferences have like a single round or a double round, or I don't even know how the Northwest Suburban works on who you played once or twice. Just kind of any rules about that you guys think that could get tweaked on, again, increasing the amount of good games we're putting out on the ice.
I don't think, like, I know we have three pretty good programs here from the last couple of years, but, like, I don't think teams want to lose 15-0, right? So I don't know what you guys feel, but
or
I know
15-0.
No, yeah, on both sides of it.
It's not beneficial. That's what I mean. Well, yeah. At the Northwest Suburban Conference, we have some very passionate coaches on both ends, and you know, they're wondering, like, why do we have to play each other if we already know from the last 4 years or how they were in Bantams that it's not good for either team to be in that situation. And I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts, but, you know, the conference thing is really tough right now with the talent gap in most of the conferences being drastic.
Yeah, I don't know how – it seems like every conference is a little bit different in how they go about this. You know, we – we can play one
that's what we do.
Game, a four-point game against anybody that it's mutually agreed upon. I'm okay with that because then it limits, at least you're not playing those teams twice where it's not beneficial to either program. But even once, you know, with only 25 games, that's significant, right? So if you could find a way for coaches to come to the same agreement to play zero times, I would have no problem with that. I think the struggle that you'd have to figure out is, you know, all conference and conference standings and things like that.
Which is where I think that three class system or the two, like deciding on if that's what's best, then your conference can have a class split in itself, right? So if
sure.
if
within the conference,
yeah. So yeah. If you have teams that elect to go to a class 3A for boys hockey, they're probably only playing a class 3A conference schedule. And I just think from an experience standpoint of your skill gap, there probably is a three class gap. And then getting the schedules to a point where they're playing in there, then you're going to have more teams playing for something too, by the way.
Right.
Like if they can actually win their conference, because it's something that in the Northwest Suburban Conference gets talked about a lot.
How big is the Northwest Suburban?
It is currently 12 teams, okay. But it sounds like it's going to be going down a team with some co-oping going on.
Got it.
Well, for me on it, it's like, so it's like I said, I've been here for a while now, so it's really transitioned in the late conference a lot over the last 10 years. And what has happened is that kind of what you said is we have a communication within the programs of how are we allowing the top teams, the bigger teams, I guess you would say, to back end their schedule with other games that people want to play against, right? Non-conference opponents. We probably play the least amount of conference games as any conference in the state in a guaranteed format. And I can't speak for other conferences, but I can tell you that every team thinks that's good. So like Hopkins hasn't played in our conference in double in a couple of years, and they've actually developed and won 15, 20 games and stuff like that. And how that transitions into section is who knows, but they've had right. a fun experience throughout the season, right? Whereas like when I started, when you had Eden Prairie, Tonka, Edina and Wayzata, and Hopkins would have to play us on the back end of that back-to-back eight
twice.
Straight games twice,
yeah.
How do you get ready for playoffs?
Right.
So the second part of it for me personally is...
And how do they keep kids playing?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's like you... And then the second piece of it is, and I'm old school, so like I like the all conference honors and hanging banners to win the late conference, but what does it even mean really, right?
Right.
Like that doesn't make me happy to say that, but it's just facts. Like it's like you should see the conversations we have at the end of the season about late conference, all late conference, and it's like there's guys from two or three teams that left to go play in the USHL after that weren't even all conference players. Who cares? But like. That's the part of the thing I'm speaking of is like
yeah, how meaningful is that?
Does that
ultimately,
you know, and at the end, 20 years from now, who really cares, right? Like, but at the time, it's like, how do you evaluate a player that scored 50 points for a certain team, but didn't play a full late conference schedule as well as didn't play one of the top one or two schedules in the season, and then you got a kid from, you know, Jackson Evers that only had 40 points at the end of the season and God knows how good he was, you know what I mean? So it's like, but there was a kid from a different program that played in the late conference that had 54, but, you know, my point of that is like, at the end of the day, like, what's the ultimate goal, you know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
section seeding and matchups, and, I mean, we never talk about who was a late conference champion and what section seeding you're going to get. It's happened maybe once in my 14 years. It's matchups, it's head-to-head, it's,
yeah.
you know, so,
yeah.
I think
the main thing here, and we can move on to the next thing just so that we can keep moving, but, like, every conference is going to work differently, obviously. Increased flexibility for the coaches, I think, should be strived for.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Yeah. But they got to communicate with each other on like how what kind of games. What is the best way to get us 25 competitive games?
Right.
It's never going to happen. But
right.
How about get 20?
The top, the middle, and the bottom.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think it needs to be said for a lot of these topics is obviously with our programs and a lot of the bigger programs in the state, the goal is to win a state championship, right? Like you got a lot of different purposes along the way. But your ultimate goal on the ice is to win a state championship. There's a lot of teams, and I've coached on them before, where that's not a realistic goal.
Yeah.
So your goal in those sense is to build something, to create a culture, to create a place where players want to play and where they're developing a good experience and a lot of life lessons. So to get back to the flexibility piece, that should be the ultimate goal, because you don't want to pigeonhole certain programs into playing games that don't necessarily meet what their ultimate season goal is, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, love it. All right, quick one here. Should single-A teams be able to schedule double-A non-conference opponents in the regular season?
I mean, yes and no. Like, I get that the rule is they can right now, and I just feel like, you know, the coaches get to pick their schedules, so I don't know how you guys feel, but
I'm okay with it if coaches want to do it. Again, it kind of gets back to the flexibility piece, right?
I think it's a relationship between the coach and the coach and how the processes went and, you know, what it's like. Some people have buddies that are coaching in a single-A program, and they want to keep that relationship together, and they think maybe it'll be a decent matchup. And, I mean, but if it's from a perspective of, like, a recruiting perspective or, like, you know, because it's like, you know, like it's when you're playing it's somebody's Super Bowl every time you play, it's tough to get kids to do that when you're on the other side of it, meaning like it's not your Super Bowl, you know,
right.
And so it's like,
right.
If you have a lot of those on your schedule, you know, it is what it is. But I think a rule for that probably is
needed.
Too rigid.
Rigid, needed, all of the above, but at the same time, like, it comes down to the individual coach having to make a decision for their program, I think.
That's my take, is, like, it's easy for us to say there needs to be a rule, but Grand Rapids already has to drive 2 hours for every game, and they have...
They don't have a lot of double-A teams around.
So they have a quality opponent that...
Yeah.
That I feel like that's where it gets dicey for those northern teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. All right,
and it's not just like if you make a rule, it wouldn't just be for Hermantown. It would be for the teams up north that, like, you know, Thief River Falls is looking for games to play.
Right.
Roseau's looking for games to play. So
they're double. East Grand Forks always want to play Moorhead and Bemidji.
Roseau,
Bemidji,
War Road,
which is good.
Right? Almost, like, they wouldn't play each other.
Yeah. And it's on this list because I've heard it discussed among people in the hockey world, because it's like people only think about those hot button areas where, like,
right.
Things are going on, but there's a lot of things that you need to consider when you make a rigid rule like that. So let's talk about training. The no contact period for coaches. Currently, I think it's right after the season until June when school's out, and then there's a week off in over the 4th of July, and then it stops at the end of July. As far as contact for head coaches training players, I know Pat and Dave work in training, and Sean, I'm assuming that you're on the ice with your guys all the time. So,
yeah, I mean, it varies on the season, right? I don't have a training program that I do other than our STP.
Okay.
So that's all we have at this point. And we just provide different options for the players to work outside of that.
Yeah. So let's talk about any adjustments we could make to that rule.
I see, you know, pros and cons to both sides of it. I think it's ironic that June and July are our 8 weeks to work with them when we're not going to see them again until November. And, you know, you throw national camp in there, you throw junior camps in there, and now we're only having 8 weeks to work with these kids. And I know, like, four of my best players were unavailable 3 of the 8 weeks. And, you know, we go through a hiring process from the school. We have to follow all the rules of how you get hired, how you work with these kids. You know, we can be fired if we do things unethical or wrong. And the bottom line is these kids then go spend more money and have to, you know, go through all these things where it's like, you know, what's the right balance? And I'm probably mostly speaking specifically in the fall for captain's practices, right? Like, does it even make sense that, like, I go run Wyzetta's runs me, like I go run Chisago Lakes's when the coaches would like to work with these kids? Like, I feel there is a way to make it, like, there's rules, like in college, like how many hours per week you can, how much should it cost, right? Like, should the rink guys make it so it's like a cookie cutter program that it is only 2 hours on ice per week? You have to have, you know, X amount of kids on the ice or be available you know, to whatever. And I just, I feel you come right into the season, like, full speed ahead, and there's so much to do in so little time.
I mean, I think for hockey is just such a different anomaly than any other sport. And I'm not ripping on any other sports, but, like, I can just speak for, like, football programs, not just YZ's, all the programs. Like, those, they have their windows as well, but those kids are all lifting and training in the weight room at the school all year long. Now, we don't, we're not sanctioned at the school like every other sport is, but I guarantee you the gymnastics team is, you know, running Herbies together. And what that is about, not just about the training piece, but it's the camaraderie piece.
Yeah.
It's the leadership piece. It's massive. The being around their buddies and, you know, or their girlfriends, you know, the teammates. They get to do that all the time, you know, and so that, I think that right there is the hardest part. And, you know, and I think that being here for as long as I've been here now, like, the kids know that, like, they enjoy the SCP program because they're with their buddies and we train them hard and so on and so forth. I don't know if that happens everywhere else, and I'm not blaming other coaches. I'm just generalizing right now. But, like, you go into a new program, it's like, you have to do the STP program. It's like, no one wants to tell you what you have to do, but, like, that's how you build the culture, right? Now, granted, and then you pigeonhole us into 3 weeks before the fourth and 3 weeks after the fourth. Next thing you know, like you said, if you have high-end players, they're not there, who you hope are the leaders and so on and so forth. So I don't know. Like, I would knowing how much, specifically in hockey, like, how much these kids train and work out and do all the other things that they're going to do, like, I would, and I know this will sound crazy because they'll talk about fall sports, but, like, I'd rather have my kids from September 1st to November 15th. Those 6 weeks, if we're going to talk about what 6 weeks I want to have them.
Likewise.
They're still going to train and work on hockey. Right. You know what I mean? But, like, yeah.
So is that the reason for the rule? Is it gets back to the other sports, multi-sport athletes.
That's where everything starts off of that.
Yeah. Yes. So they don't want coaches to require kids to play. Mm-hmm. They don't want kids to feel
miss something
forced.
For something.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. And I get that.
Same.
I can sympathize with that. But,
we love that.
But like you said, the kids that are they're already having to make these decisions.
But that's my point.
And then they're
right?
going into training.
There's
elsewhere.
Captain's practices anyways. And so then you're looking to spend more money in hiring out coaches that don't want to be there or do. And then you have all the drama of how you plan all that when we want to be there. I don't know.
Yeah.
And the timing is goofy because the other thing with being so separated from the actual season is that we have the same contact period of June and July as every sport. So you've also got football trying to fit in those 6 weeks. You've got baseball trying to fit in
those six weeks.
People want to go golfing.
I think it would actually create more multi-sport athletes
if they could go to
football in June and July and get ready for the football season.
Right.
I see so many kids making that multi-sport decision based on summer training.
Yeah, there's just not enough time in the day.
Like, how do you do it? Yeah. How do you commit
want a summer
to a
job maybe
and a
too?
Team? Yeah.
Or enjoy your summer. Be a kid. Like, there's just not enough time in the day for these guys.
I think a football player would rather skate 2 hours a week in September and October with his hockey buddies, worked around his football schedule, as opposed to trying to figure out the June and July team bonding, because it is so important, because it is only 6 weeks for us to work with those kids.
Right. And these kids, they're not lacking training options, at least the high-end kids, right? So there's so many options out there for not just the high-end players. So there's a lot of availability for kids to train in the summer if it's not provided by us. I would agree that a way better system would be where it's much closer to the season.
Yeah, and then I like what you said, Dave, about making some requirements on the amount of hours per week. I think that's a good safeguard there.
Is that not how college does it when they get back to school?
Tears
in the fall?
Every month or something changes.
Yeah,
preseason training camp.
Yeah, sometimes they can have their coaches out there earlier on. They can't.
Like three times a week.
I think the college hockey schedule is eerily similar to what we're doing. It's based on school. It's based on those things. And there's multi-sport athletes in Division I sports. So it's possible.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the hot button. I'm just kidding. But
do you have a hot button, like a noise beep. That goes?
Sound bar?
Yeah,
sound
you got a goal?
We got a couple,
goal light on out there?
A couple callers, actually, on the line.
Zappers?
Let's talk about playoff format. It gets discussed every single year. People either complain, accept it, whatever. What do you think is possible in the future? Maybe that's 5-10 years down the road, but what do you think is the best way to go on this? And maybe we can fold this into my next question, which is the 3-tier system, single A, double A, triple A, and whether that's a good idea. But what are your thoughts?
I think the section finals have become an awesome experience. I've heard some guys that have played in the state say the section final was almost just as cool, if not more cool. And like the smaller venues has been awesome, in my opinion. The only thing I would do would be reseed those section finals into 1 through 16. Keep the venues. I mean, we're not even doing much that's too crazy, but you know, Buffalo and Elk River, where do they play their section final?
St. Cloud.
Okay. So figure out where those venues are and then seed out 1 through 16 based on those venues. And I think you would have an amazing atmosphere in your section finals, but then get the best 8 teams to the state tournament. And that, you know, I think it's really cool that Rochester, John Marshall made the state tournament. I do. And I still think those things are going to happen because I believe upsets happen in high school sports. But I think from getting your best 4 teams to the X should be something you're looking for. And when 7 of the top 10 teams in the state couldn't get to the state tournament, I think that's where the issue lays. Not so much just trying to get the top schools more access to the state tournament. It's let's make it so that the section finals are still amazing. Let's make it so that everyone still has a chance to get to those games and those atmospheres. But then the state tournament needs to have not 7 running time games, in my opinion.
I mean, if you re-up, the easiest one, and I told you we had this conversation at the board meeting, is the easiest start is that. The easiest start is a reseed after the section finals.
Before the section finals?
Sorry. Yeah. After the semis. That's number one. You know, like, I've changed my tune on this a lot just because I feel like as you stay somewhere for a long time and you've been on both sides of the fence, you've won a championship, you've lost in section finals, you know, whatever the case may be, then your clout gets a little bit louder and you're not just asking for a personal decision on getting your team to the state tournament every single year. 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have said that just because you feel like you're a whiny baby, but it's not the case.
Well, it's, the irony is, like, and I'll just speak on your stance here, is if you reseed for section finals, it's going to be harder for you to win the state championship because mm-hmm. the state tournament's going to be harder.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when you're playing Minnetonka in that section final, we win this game, we're probably getting to the state championship. And I know it's easier said than done, but like when there's that many running time games and that many teams are getting knocked out, it's not that you're trying to win a state championship easier. It's trying to get the best experience and our game to be at its best. And I think showcasing some unbelievable games at the state tournament is like the mecca, right? There's 20,000 people there.
If you're gonna, like I said, like the easiest layer of the onion is that part of it. The harder but better way of doing it, in my opinion, which will never happen, probably, but the work is you got to realign the sections at some point. You know what I mean? It's gotten to the point where it's just crazy right now, where like the sections, there's a couple that are really, really, really good. There's a couple that are good, and then there's like 3 that aren't good. And then, you know what I mean? And that's fine. Like, say whatever you want about my comment, but that's just facts. You know what I mean? So it's like, yes, but I think there's got to be a way to organize it betterly. It's not even a word. Better. And I understand the reason that they talk about it all the time is they want northern teams shown, they want southern teams shown.
But that's the irony. Section 8 had Buffalo and Elk River.
Northern teams.
From the Lake Conference and the Northwest Suburban Conference. So even the realignment of the way they do it is not even getting what they want. And if Buffalo and Elk River are playing in the section final from the Lake Conference and the Northwest Suburban Conference and your goal is to have a northern team, 2 northern teams or whatever, like, it's not working. That's my point, and I think Pat's point is...
Well, I was going to bring up, like, the pushback obviously would be the geographical representation at the X. I guess my point on the reseeding to the 16 teams is the path to that section final is going to be easier for some sections right now.
That's fair.
Edina beat Benilde to get to the section final, so that was their...
And Benilde was the 5th best team.
And we beat Holy Angels.
We had Shakopee, and they were...
The 6th best team.
And so the it's already baked in of that's tougher to get to that section final, and then you have your game to go to state, and you're still going to get the Moorheads, the Grand Rapids, Duluth East, you know, Rochester, like you said, upsets happen, first of all, and like every 5 years they're going to have a really good group that comes through and makes the tournament.
Yes.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think, and we've already touched on it, but the first question that has to be asked and answered is, what is the state tournament? Is it the best eight teams in the state, or is it the best team from every region of the state? And I think depending on who you are and obviously where you're from, your answer is entirely different there. Yeah. It seems to me like reseeding in the section finals is at least a good middle ground to start at, right? Where you still have geographic representation. Sure, is it possible after you reseed that all eight teams are from the metro? It is possible, but a team like Grand Rapids still has a very real chance of making it in that situation like they did this year. And getting to your point, it almost happened this year where there were zero northern teams, right? If Andover beats Rapids, and if Lakeville South beats Rochester,
there's zero teams.
It's all metro teams. So even the way we have it, it's still possible to be all metro teams.
Agreed.
You know, obviously, being from this area, selfishly, where there's a lot of good hockey teams, and you want those best teams to get a chance to perform at the state tournament. That would be how I would define a state tournament. I think maybe youth hockey has a different middle ground where they have that one northern section, right? But two teams
from
each region.
That's the other option, is one northern
section. One northern region, top two teams from each make it, or however you want to do it. But some type of middle ground has to be found in order for it to at least continue where people get to go watch those best games in person. Because that's the biggest downside. Those section finals are awesome. Great atmosphere. Local buildings, but not, you got to know someone to even go watch it, right?
True.
So it's true. Hard to get tickets for those games, at least with 2 and 6. I know that.
Well, the thing about it, and we were talking about this too, is I was talking to an NHL scout about this, is like maybe they do a better job of scouting, but it is what it is. But it's like, can we get, if we do it this way, I think you're going to get 10 to 30, I know that's a wide range, of the best players in the state on the biggest stage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which will be, forget about the teams.
We would get more kids drafted in the NHL
with
subtle changes to where they could see best versus best. And I think that's a big part of, you know, getting kids to stay in this is those types of things, is how frowned upon Minnesota high school hockey is sometimes amongst NHL, certain NHL and some USHL organizations.
And I'm not an NHL scout, so I wouldn't be able to answer this, but I'd have to imagine that part of what they're looking at is how kids play in a high pressure situation or in those big moments with a lot of fans, you know? So, you know, they're probably more likely to take a game in the state semifinals with 20,000 fans, Edina versus whoever, right? Edina versus Minnetonka, let's say, in the state semis. They're probably more willing to look at that than a game at Braemar in December.
And I think if you, like, make this top 16 or even top 32 if you want to do that and start finding the Ritter Arenas or the Bemidji State Arenas that do have more Mariucci seats, you're going to even fill those now.
Oh, yeah.
I think if those games get leveled up, now you're talking about creating a state tournament. Like,
well, I just saw a joke on Twitter this morning when I woke up. I was filing through before I came here, and it was talking about, they just posted a picture of where the region is, where Michigan and Northern Michigan, Michigan. And they took a picture of it, and someone quoted on it or tweeted back. That was really fun. I started laughing out loud, actually. They're like, they said, there's a few sections in the state that semifinals would sell that out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, 100%.
We saw it. They happen, do. But, like, you know what I mean?
Those,
like,
tickets are going for $1,000.
Yeah.
So, anyways. Right. But.
All right. Do we want to touch on the three-tier system idea?
Whole other idea that would probably help that. Yeah. Situation,
I think what
right?
we talked about prior to coming on here is something we can touch base on. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but like, we think we all agreed that like having a three-tier situation would allow for more development and common ground games and more opportunities for all three tiers, right? So basically, like the as it's set up right now, forget about the double A because we all know how that looks, but the single A, the issue we're dealing with is there's a Laverne team or a wherever, there's teams from everywhere that have a good group of kids, a Cloquet team that they're playing double A, but if they were playing single A, and so like a three-tier team would make that middle range teams decide, do they want to stay there, compete versus whoever we're talking about, to get to the X. If they don't, then you have an opportunity to have a really good team from you know, La Crescent with the kid that had 150 points. Like, if they were single A, like, maybe they made it to the X. I don't know. Yeah. I just think the three-tier team system would help scheduling throughout the year. It'll be a little bit of work, but have a lot more common ground games and a lot more 3-2 overtime games instead of the 15-0s and then the, you know, whatever the case may be. I think it would just, the product overall would be better. Every other sport's done it. Yep. Football is 6 tiers. You know what I mean?
Like the thing that baffles me the most is there's substantially more double-A teams than single-A hockey teams. Okay? And if we already have two classes and we still have 18-0 games, that tells me something's not working. Because if you have an 18-0 game in a two-class system, that to me tells me, why is there even a two-class system?
Right.
And so if the three-class system could solve maybe the previous three discussions we've had, now maybe it's at least worth trying something. I think it's crazy that there's double-A teams that don't have a chance for nothing to play for. Like, nothing.
It gets back to what I said earlier. There's some teams who just know the state championship's not a goal.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And there's other things you can do to make it a really, really positive experience.
Sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So to piggyback your point, it's like, when we say this, you know, whatever, but, you know, if you're the coach at La Crescent, let's say, that did a great job this year, and it's like, some of these teams that are in the different areas in the state are opting up to double A because they're telling their kids that we're going to play a double A schedule, and that's how you compete against the best players in the state, which you can't deny that, right? But at the same time, then you cut that onion up and you're like, oh my God, we just got smoked by 15 goals 3 games in a row. So it's like, are you sure you want to play? I don't know. It's just, it doesn't, yeah. The development piece is
but
is
I, at I, the heart I think of it, if, you know? I think if three, the third class was your top X amount of teams every year, right? And then there's a vote, like a coach's vote of who those teams are. Then I think what that's going to do is make the 1A and the 2A a better system for school size and those types of things. Whereas, you know, in the Northwest Suburban Conference, there are the bottom half are all AA schools, and they're the ones that are getting their butts kicked. And if we're trying to build community-based programs, well, those are the teams that need to have atmospheres for their students and their community and their culture to put on an awesome hockey experience in a hockey game. Well, and so I don't think it just would benefit the top teams. I think it would really benefit the, like he's saying, the middle tier teams.
I think it would help them keep kids too.
That's what I mean.
Like you're always going to worry. It doesn't matter what program you are. Those top end kids, you're at risk of losing the national development team, right? USHL. But what about those kids that are the NAHL kids, the NAHL kids, or maybe even a tier three program? They might look to go be a third liner at a big school that has a chance at going to the state tournament over staying at their school that, you know.
Agreed. Because
it's probably ranked 40th in the state in double A.
And I know we're going to touch on this, but trying to keep guys on certain programs is huge, right?
Yeah.
But you're saying, if I have nothing to play for here and a schedule that's not allowing me to play top talent, I'm not getting exposure, those kids are the reason they're leaving, is because you just listed 5 reasons on nothing to play for.
Right.
And that's only going
to
help those kids
want to
have something to play for, yeah. And realizing junior hockey will come when it comes.
Well, and we can wrap this one up, but like it's important to underline why Minnesota High School works is because of all the opportunities to be on a first power play and play meaningful hockey. So the more we can increase that, the more the system will flourish with that, of just opportunities of playing meaningful hockey and, like you said, building those programs up. So you mentioned it. Let's just quickly touch on some transfer stuff.
I think Pat said it best earlier, so if he wants to go first.
You know, like, basically, for me, I think that we understand where we are with everything, with the transfer stuff. I just think that we walk in a very slippery slope of what the intent is behind it. If they really think that moving to a different community in a different school district and a different program, whether you like the coaching better, the development, all the, I don't know, whatever the reason is.
Something to play for.
I'm not sure that there's anything wrong with that, right? Now, if we're in the business of jumping all the time and maybe you don't like the coach, but then you don't like the next coach, but then you don't like the next coach, but it's like you don't, then we're falling into like maybe this is a you problem moreover than just a hockey problem. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, like, I'm old school, so I was like, when kids started transferring to YZ, I was like very like not shocked because I understand the product that we have, but like in the school, but it's like we have plenty of kids that come up through the program. But there's that doesn't mean that some that are transferring aren't doing it for the right reasons, whether it's they, you know, there's, I don't know, you know what I mean? So I don't know what the rules are, what it should be, what they shouldn't be, and all that kind of stuff. So
my biggest
thing, moving your family to a community is one thing.
I think the biggest thing to look at is, and it's not just a boys hockey thing, it is every sport, okay? So the State High School League needs to look and say it's happening in every sport. It's being covered. It's being talked about. It's being asked in post-game interviews after you win the state championship. Just make it so it's not, like, under the table. Like, make it so it's actually, like, these are the rules. These are the real rules. This is the process. And I think people's gripes is how many times it's done the wrong way. And I think that those are fair arguments as opposed to the right way. And if it is to better the game or better experiences or better opportunities in all these sports, I think it's crazy that boys hockey gets blamed for it the most when, in my opinion, and the Andover coach says it best, the boys hockey coaches are probably the least likely to go out and find kids.
Right.
I know you guys were talking about how the same kids reach out to the same coaches and then try us out, and it's like you're just going to pay for four STPs. And then pick on the 4th of July where you're playing.
Right.
Well, I think the biggest thing, and you're 100% accurate, and I think to piggyback what I was saying earlier, is that I want to make it very clear that speaking to a lot of the coaches that I talk to, youth two included, and then other ones, especially everywhere, is just so you know, kids moving into programs isn't just happening in the Lake Conference. It happens in Warroad. It happens in Moorhead. It happens in Grand Rapids. It happens everywhere, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with it, right? I'm just telling you right now, like speaking from the coaches that I speak from, and I'm not everyone's a saint, but I'm going to throw 90% out there, which is a high number, are not spending their springs searching for kids to come play for them. They're getting the phone calls and they're getting the intel. The people are reaching out to them, right? There's not a transfer portal that people think where it's just like we're like right when the season ends, like we're calling up the kids from wherever and saying, you want to play for us next year? It doesn't happen. I'm just going to tell you right now. So
one of the move-ins that scored against us in the section final for Maple Grove is from Colorado, right? Like I can promise you Todd Berglund's not in Colorado searching for players. I can promise you Mark Manny is not going around figuring out, okay, A, who's willing to move. B, who's disgruntled, like, that is...
Like, I'm trying to take Elk River's best player when they had, what's his name, like, 3 years ago. No, he wasn't going to Elk River to grab their... It's not how it works.
It's...
Well, we're all high school coaches for a reason. Yeah. We're not college coaches. Mm-hmm. We're not junior hockey coaches. Like, we develop relationships with these kids that are in our program.
And the families.
And the families.
We're the ones that have to cut
kids. And the youth programs. Yes. And we want these kids to succeed. Yeah. We want them to succeed.
Well, I don't know if you guys all saw it, but just as we're speaking of, and I think as what happens is everything's a pyramid scheme, right? Meaning like trickle down from somewhere. And I don't relate necessarily like high school hockey, but let's put all the sports into a mix. But I do relate high school sports to college right now and how terrible that is in general. And if I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I highly recommend that you listen to the old Alabama coach Saban's thing he did when he talked about. When he was almost done, why it got crazy for him.
Well, the transfer portal.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it basically means you have to be a transactional coach and not a transformational coach at that point. Yeah. If it is all about what we can give you and not what you're going to do for the program or how you're going to develop as a person or an athlete. And I think the transfer portal, you know, it's funny. I was with a college coach this last weekend up in Fargo, and he just said, like, we're going to get to the point where you're on your third team in 3 years all the time. Like, hopefully it comes full circle to where that there's a line in the sand. Like you're saying, if you're on your third team in 3 years, it's a you problem.
Yeah. And right? I can't imagine that looks great for scouts, right?
100%.
Or colleges or NHL scouts or whatever sport you're talking about.
Well, what Saban said, which really hit me to heart, is like we do something at Wayzata where every year at the beginning of the season we bring all the players to my house and my wife makes them breakfast. And everyone does it, right? But just whatever. And that he hit on that point, so it hit hard for me. Was he said that, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, lately, they do the same thing. They bring the parents and the kids to Saban's house for a brunch right before training camp starts, once they have all their commits. And what the wife did, which I thought was really cool, because we all know how much our wives and parents and everybody that family supports us to do this, is really involved. And he said that prior to this last year, when they would come, he would have the moms and the dads of the players that they committed and said that they were going to change their lives over the next 4 years of them. And Mrs. Saban would spend an hour to 2 hours just with the moms or the parents and tell them, like, here's how we operate. Here's what we're going to do for your son. We're going to change their lives. Are they going to be good at football? Obviously. But, like, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden she said, and this was crazy, he said that she said that after this last year, when before he's just like, why are we doing this anymore? They don't care about coming here and coming to our house and having lunch and how we're going to treat them as kids. They're trying to get to the NFL or get NIL money and so on and so forth. Now, I'm not comparing that to high school hockey whatsoever or sports in general, high school basketball, football, whatever the case may be. But that part is broken, in my opinion. And that's why we do what we do, is we enjoy the process of trying to develop a human and a hockey player over a span of, you hope, 4 years, you hope 10 years, maybe 2 years, whatever, not 6 months.
And
right.
Ohio State.
Long term.
And just to touch on the Saban point, like Ohio State, he always talks about how the hardest thing for him is when you become the cool kid, what you're attracting, right? And so, like, this goes to Mark Manny's point from Andover, is like, once you become the cool kid and you win a state championship or you go to state or you have NHL draft picks, all of a sudden everyone flocks to you. Like, you get 10, 15, 20 kids and families trying to move in and do whatever, and then trying to figure out the culture thing and what you're actually trying to preach and what you've actually built, then that starts seeping out because you're attracting people looking for something that the fast track or the easy way to success.
I'm going to give you a funny story that my dad told me as we were watching the basketball state tournament. They're switching back and forth to the girls' state tournament, and they're doing this highlight on Maddie Greenway, who's like ridiculous, right? Plays for Providence Academy. What he said, which I didn't even think about, which is actually 100% accurate, is he said that whoever gets her, and they're hoping that you gets her, but whatever, she's going to get five star athletes to come
yep.
in, and it changes your whole program in one day.
Right.
100%.
Yep.
So, you know, and she's a great leader and great person, so it's actually going to be even more than that. She's not even doing it for her own self. She's going to she gathered four or five girls to go to Providence Academy to play basketball, which is a great school, but it's not known as a basketball program.
Which, if people are wondering who actually
does the recruiting, yeah.
it's not the coaches.
No.
It's the kids and the parents.
Yeah. Well, and I think
this is an honest podcast.
It's always honest.
Get into the 90% number you said, Pat. I think, you know, we've all had kids and families reach out to us after a season, right? That's usually how it starts. The difference with some coaches, and I think it's probably 90% answer the same way I do. I'm not in the room with other coaches, but there are the 10% who answer differently. And I just tell a family, look, here's our program. You can see who we had last year. You can see who we're graduating.
Yeah.
This is a family decision that you guys have to make based on a lot of different factors. And I'm not going to give you any promises about playing time or anything like that, right? And you get some families who they go elsewhere when they hear that.
100%.
They want a promise because it's a big decision for them, right? But why would I promise a player that I don't know when I'm not even promising my own players playing time?
The kid, right? That you've coached for 10 years,
yeah.
Who's your senior captain,
right.
You're not even promising
no,
him.
No, I don't promise anybody
one.
Playing no. time, right? And yeah. I think most
Agreed.
Coaches don't. But there are some who will fall into that trap. I hope it's 10% or less. But I don't think that, like, look, we had kids moved into Chan that didn't grow up in Chan. We had two this last year. They were both really, really good, impactful players. I didn't promise them anything. So they still came. Right?
Agreed.
But you have some that won't transfer unless if they get a promise or at least some type of an assurance. And I don't really know where I'm going with this, whether you can't make a rule about that
what
or anything, but you got to trust the coach they're doing things.
What
the
I would
right
say
way,
is to
I
piggyback
guess.
Your, what you're saying is that on top of that part, and this is every sport, it's not just hockey, but we're talking about hockey right now. These people are reaching out to the same four or five coaches as well.
Yep.
Programs. And so I personally think, and I can just speak for myself, is when I meet with people or talk about coming to Wayzata, I do exactly what you do. Lay out the foundation, blah, 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 all the things you talk about, good school, good training, all the stuff you're thinking about, right? You have good staff, whatever. But I always tell them the same thing. It's the same thing you said. Is like, I don't guarantee anybody playing time because at the end of the day, if I'm doing that, then I'm the one, only the one, that if you don't play in the top six or the top nine is getting berated by somebody.
Yeah, it's on you.
Whether it's
sure.
your own kids
yeah.
or kids that transfer in. Now, on top of that, I also tell them that like, I don't always ask them who else they're looking at because it doesn't really make a difference to me. But I always tell them, like, I kind of have an idea, and you can't really go wrong with any of them. You got to find the best fit for your family and your own kid.
100%.
What else are you going to do?
And, right. I'm you have to be very honest with them. It's like, why are you moving here? And they most of the time can't answer that question the right way. And it's like, don't move your whole family for your senior year for one game, right? Like, we still lose games. We still have locker room issues. We still have only one power play, and only one kid gets to stand on the half wall. Everyone else has to be in, I don't know, the front of the net.
Or on the bench,
right? Like, and when you move these things, like, you might get hurt. There are so many factors where
you
might it's
struggle
like,
in school.
You right. lose your friends yeah. that you've had for 15 it's years. I don't think
this podcast is qualified enough to say there should be some sort of rule.
It was good to hear you guys talk about it, especially because you hear so many people out there like. Recruiting everything, you know, this is BS, and it's just like that's not the case. And it was good to hear from you guys that of how you approach the issue. Yeah. I guess we're gonna wrap it up here with some lightning round rule changes, actually in game, and I'm just gonna get your initial feedback on some of these that have been floated in the past. Race to the dots for icing,
100%.
Yeah, I think that'd be as long as you have the refs to do it and the linesmen to do it. I think so.
One ref, two linesman system, and pay the linesman the same as the refs. Because I think if you're adding linesman rules,
yeah.
then look at it.
Two of them,
yeah. Then you need two of them and one ref, and make sure they're paid right.
Well,
don't answer a question you weren't asked. That wasn't the question.
The next one's another linesman rule. No change after icing.
Awesome.
Yes.
I think you'd have to do both hand in hand.
Yes.
I don't know why. Just because that's how it's always been done, I guess.
Yeah.
But it seems like they go hand in hand.
Any concern on the ability of the refs to sort that out and like the delay of the game?
That's where you
of that?
Need two. You need yeah. two linesmen.
Mm-hmm. And they would have to like get better at it, right? So you watch and there's an icing. The one linesman skates to the bench immediately. And then the referee people. Does and yeah. the one guy gets the puck. So that's where you would need it's not easy.
Yeah. Puck shot directly out of play results in a power play.
No.
Nope. Too hard to decipher.
Yeah. We'd have to get in the video review. And
we don't need any more video reviews.
Plus, yeah. I don't even like that rule in the NHL. So.
Yeah.
And yeah, it needs video review half the time.
Yeah. Overtime moving to either some portion of 4-on-4 or 3-on-3.
I vote 3-on-3.
3-on-3.
For all 8 minutes?
3-on-3 is a blast. Yeah. I love it.
Regular season.
100%. Why not?
Yeah. Yep.
More entertainment for the student section.
Well,
right?
And it's a steadfast, like, yeah, you might not win them all, but you're going to win some of them.
And then the ZAM driver is less mad that it takes 8 minutes extra to get their 9:15 practice on
less
the
less ties, too. I mean, we right. have like four or five ties, it seems like.
And then you don't know if you're supposed to yell at the kids or be proud of them. You got to let us know what to do with practice right. the next day.
Moving on to the next practice.
What about like the way penalties are called? Do you think there's too many penalties being called in high school hockey, and like what types of penalties?
I think that the fact that slashes, hooks never get called on our skilled guys is a huge problem with our game, because it's like we play a tough style hockey, but we really don't. It's all stick work. And the fact that the only things that get called are half the time things that shouldn't be called, and then we're not even protecting our skilled guys anyways.
That's a great question. I don't really care either way. I just think the consistency is so bad. Meaning like you can, and I think because people watch the NHL and college hockey and stuff like that, but they're calling slashes and hooks early in the season. And you know, guys are playing way harder in the playoffs. We all do. But like what you can do November 27th compared to what you can't do on March, whatever it is very drastic, you know? And so it's like, I don't know. I feel like there's if slash the heck out of people, you know, during the season they're getting called, then they never call it in the playoffs or vice versa, whichever one it is. It's just not consistent.
Pat said earlier the game is the best it's been in a while and fast and all these things. And so what I see is two referees out there trying to call icings, offsides, penalties. Like the list is super long. And the game, they're already trying to get out of the way. They're already trying to stay in position. And when you watch a BAM AA game, the one orange stripe and the two linesmen allows that one guy to focus on strictly penalties. Mm-hmm. And now he's able to stand in certain ways. Now, the tough part is he's got to be also called a goals. So I think they just have to look at the overall model of the referees and decide what's the most important. And I think all three of us agree it's the icings and the offsides are – and these kids are getting so good at those area plays at the blue line that we're getting offsides called on us when we're not offsides. And then they're missing
– for sure.
Because
they're close. It's close and fast.
They're hard. They're close. And it's just the linesman thing is really hard.
Yeah. This is a slightly variation because I agree with what you guys are saying, so I don't have a whole lot to add to that. But I always have a conversation – not always. I have a conversation with a lot of referees and officials, oftentimes even after the game, not in a argumentative sense, but I'm always curious if they watch film on their games because obviously we do. We're just about constant improvement and trying to better ourselves. And I don't think there's really much of an incentive for an official to watch film after their games because they're not getting paid to do it.
Yep. They're struggling to find refs, so then they're reffing 10 games a week. So they're gassed.
That's another game to ref.
It's a lot of games that they're watching then. But I would love to see some type of an incentive. Maybe it's monetary. I don't know where they find the money, but some way for these refs to make an extra buck or two or 20 or however it works, whatever the numbers are, to watch a certain number of game films and of what they did during the week or reflect on their games.
Or get together on a Sunday for a midseason conference.
Yeah, it's 100%. Not even
required. So the consistency is there.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think stuff like that would be incredibly beneficial.
And I don't want to put more on the official's plate. I know, again, I don't want to make it harder to be an official. I would be a terrible ref. I'm only good at reffing from my bench calls that go towards our way, right? That's all I'm good at. I'm joking here, obviously, but
we're all professionals at that.
But if
our game-winning goal against Moorhead this year was 7 feet offsides.
When I go out and ref, when we do a scrimmage during a practice or whatever, and I go out and ref, if we do a 10-minute live 5-on-5, I'm bad at it. It's fine, and that's okay. But so I'm not harping on officials at all. But I'd love to see them to be incentivized to improve and reflect and get better at what they're doing, because we're doing it, and not granted we're not getting paid for it either, but we also have a lot of kids and families that are relying on us to help better them too.
Yeah. All right. I know Pat has to has an appointment of some sort. I won't mention it on the air, but thank you guys for being here. I think this is awesome, and it'll be very interesting to listen to. Any other thoughts before we wrap it up?
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Let's do it again soon. Yep.